Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. Today, we're going to talk about another one of our favorite topics, and that is motivation.
Motivation.
And it's motivation with a little bit different of a perspective that we're going to talk about
today.
That's
right. This is a graduate course on motivation.
That's right.
This is not motivation 101.
That's right. And it's from it's inspired by true events. No, it's inspired by a article that was in Psychology Today called The Mystery of Motivation, written by Gary Drevich. We don't know much about him because there wasn't any information but you know, he pulls from so many different fields and so many different perspectives that this article is pretty long.
It's very long.
Pretty dense. But it's really, it just gives you such a different perspective or a different angle of motivation that we just have to talk about it.
Right. We did a podcast recently about hormones in adolescence, and we made the point there that it's not just what we assumed. Mm-hmm. And this article on motivation sort of takes the same tack, is that it's not, we assume that rewards and punishments are effective.
Mm-hmm.
What this article states is that that may not be the case, and that's the difference. You and I are not big believers in reward and punishment systems, especially with child rearing.
Right.
Okay, we sort of take that Alfie Cohen's approach to reward and punishment, that there are better ways to raise children than reward and punish. And this article gives the research behind his thinking.
Yeah.
There's a whole literature out there that many people are not aware of, that rewards and punishments are not really very effective.
Right.
We've often said on this program that punishment will reduce the behavior, but it won't eliminate it.
Right.
Okay. Rewards might work, but they may not work, and they may have just the opposite effect as you intend.
And neither may teach anything.
It may not get you very
much. So it
doesn't
generalize, and may not be used in other settings or other situations.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
But I can see on your notes page that you have a ton of things written down, and so I know you'll probably need your glasses.
I have to confess, this took me a couple of tries to get all this organized.
Did it?
Yeah, because normally we read these little blogs and it makes sense and we come in and talk about them. This one and the hormones article were a little more challenging.
Yeah.
It took a little more effort,
so
more careful reading, and then you try to organize it so that we can summarize this very long article. It's difficult to summarize it. But it really divides itself into five pieces.
Right.
Okay. And the first piece is the Wells Fargo scandal.
Right. It starts out talking about the 2011 Wells Fargo scandal where, the employees were
incentivized. Right.
Or else, another word for that is offered rewards if they were and get more accounts signed and get more people into the bank.
Right, to open more accounts.
Right.
Okay, and so the goal was to open more accounts. We don't know what the goal was, whether you had to open 20 or 30 or however many per month, didn't matter. But the goal was you had to open new accounts.
But the total number were 2 million.
But they ended up opening 2 million new accounts, right?
Right. Okay. Some of which were in family members' names.
That's right. What some employees would do is they would ask family members, I have to meet my quota. Can you open up a couple of new accounts?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to use them. You just have to open them.
Right.
Okay. Because they said that in many of the accounts, there was no money.
Right.
They were just opening the accounts. But in some cases, accounts were opened unbeknownst to the customer.
Right.
That all of a sudden you had four or five bank accounts and you didn't even know it.
Right.
Okay. That was the bigger problem.
Yeah.
Okay. And what the point that the author makes, it wasn't the author, it was one of the investigators or a psychologist, said, if the goal seems unrealistic and you can cheat to make it, mm-hmm. you're going to cheat.
Right.
Okay. And so the incentive became impossible to reach.
Right.
The goals became impossible. Employees couldn't do it. And they right. talk about people falling apart and quitting and mm-hmm. drinking. I guess one woman started drinking hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. There was alcohol in it. That people had to do all these weird things to try to meet those unrealistic goals. Yeah. One of the things they did is they cheated. They yeah. opened up accounts yeah. and customers didn't know.
Yeah.
So while it seemed like a good idea, it backfired. And right. the bank ended up having to pay
millions of dollars.
Hundreds of millions of dollars in fines. Right.
Mm-hmm. So the question then is, why would it be that people, that these potential rewards mm-hmm. result in others, in individuals, doing something that they know is wrong? Something that being so motivated by this potential reward that mm-hmm. they were willing to do something that's not just illegal.
Right.
But is going to, you know, harm the lives of other people.
Right. That's right. And they would, you mm-hmm. know, given that. And it reminds me of those experiments with the electric shocks. You know,
that's what we're going to be talking Yale, about. That, yeah.
The Yale studies.
Yeah.
What would motivate a person to do that? Well, it's kind of an incentive.
Well, did you know that we were going to talk? We're going to have a live YouTube chat about the experience. You remembered. The experimenter, we're going to talk about that.
I forgot all about that.
Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, if you're listening to this on the day that it posts, it's going to be tonight.
Ah, that's right. We talked about that a couple weeks ago.
That's right. So it's The Experimenter. Mm-hmm. That's the name of the movie. Right. We're going to be talking about that tonight.
The Experimenter.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so that was the first thing
right.
he talks about, is Wells Fargo scandal and how you get things to do. How you get people to do things. Second point of the article is, what does it take to do the right thing?
Right.
What do you have to do? What does it take to get people to do the right thing? Mm-hmm. And in this part, he makes two wonderful points. One is, he talks about the concept of homo economicus. I wanted to make sure I got it right.
Homo economicus. Homo economicus, right.
That we will act in our economic best interest.
Right.
May not be the case. Okay, yeah. We've often talked about mm-hmm. people vote. We said, well, people vote in their best interests. Mm-hmm. Not always. Okay.
Yeah.
But in this section, he says that when people are intrinsically motivated to do something, mm-hmm. economic incentives will reduce and change the whole equation. And he gives two different examples. The easiest to understand is the Boston firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And he said that the Boston firefighters, they wanted to reduce the number of sick days.
Mm-hmm.
They saw the sick days climbing, so they wanted to reduce the number of sick days that firefighters took. So they said, because they had an unlimited number of sick days that they were allowed to take. Okay, and they wanted to reduce the number that they were taking. So they said, okay, you're limited to 15.
Mm-hmm.
In a single year, you could take 15 sick days. What happened? The number of sick days doubled.
Right.
Why? Because the firefighters had this intrinsic motivation of serving the people of Boston.
Right.
You know, I mean, certain kinds of people become firefighters.
There
aren't a lot of people who run into a building
yeah.
that everybody else is running out of.
Right.
Okay. So there is some intrinsic motivation, some sense of duty,
mm-hmm.
responsibility mm-hmm. to the citizens that firefighters and police officers and soldiers have. Okay. Once you change the equation and say you get 15 days, then they're saying, okay, I get 15 days.
Right.
So they took the days that they were
right.
given. Okay.
Right.
Because what happened was what he refers to it as crowding out.
Mm-hmm.
You crowd out the intrinsic motivation by introducing some other incentive, whether
right.
it's money or time or days off.
Yeah.
The other example is picking your kids up at daycare.
Right. Yeah.
We want you to come at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
And most parents do their best to get there at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
But when the daycare started to fine parents for
yeah.
being late, then it changed the equation because now you were buying something.
Right.
Okay. It went from this is my responsibility to, okay, I have to pay $3 for every 15 minutes that I'm late. I'm going to buy 15 minutes and not worry about when I get there.
Right.
Okay. So the percentage of parents picking up their children mm-hmm. late increased dramatically.
Right.
So you move from intrinsic motivation to extrinsic motivation, mm-hmm. and that's another problem.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about that many, right. many times.
Yeah, he pulled that from The Economist, an economist who said, you know, one way to increase the likelihood that someone will do the right thing is if you offer incentives
right.
for doing what you want them to do and to avoid what you don't want them to do. And sometimes, mm-hmm. While that is often the case, as you said, sometimes that backfires, and, right. and it creates additional problems, right. creates other issues.
Right, because you're changing the relationship.
Right.
You've changed the relationship from somebody doing it out of a sense of duty,
right.
to now we have some economic exchange.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I'm just,
right.
you know, I don't mind paying. It's worth it for me to spend another 30 minutes of work. I'll pay you mm-hmm. to babysit my children.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So you've changed it to
sort
of an employment situation.
Yeah. Number three.
Putting a price on bad behavior.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's it's a fascinating point because, again, we're talking about, you know, what we're talking about some type of exchange. We're talking about some type of, you know, this is what this is worth. This is what... you know, if you do this, you get this, or if you mm-hmm. don't do this, you get that.
Right.
So, you know, for me, it keeps going back to what we always say that, you know, reward and punish types of perspectives
right.
are so restricted, so limited in their utility.
Right. And here again, we can use that daycare example, but if I ask you to come over and turn off the water, mm-hmm. remember that Sunday morning?
I do remember that Sunday
or
morning.
Or if you ask a friend to help you move, okay, mm-hmm. if something, all of us were asked, hey, we're moving, can I help, you know, I had a refrigerator and a sofa and all that stuff. And so, can you come over and help me move?
Right.
And you do, and I say, okay, that was great, here's a couple beers, or, I give, you know,
right.
let's go out to dinner, or I take you to lunch, or mm-hmm. there's some exchange like that. I wouldn't dare pay you for that. It would never occur to me to say, here's $10 for helping me move, because
right.
that violates the relationship.
Right.
Okay. And so it's,
right.
you don't pay somebody, you know, it's like you take somebody out on a date.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do? Pay you back. You know, they say, here's $10.
Right.
Or here's
$20.
You right. know, that's, it's a finance, it, a personal relationship and doing it for the right reason.
Right.
Becomes a financial transaction.
Right.
Okay. And you don't want to make things, whether it's money
mm-hmm.
or whatever mm-hmm. else you're exchanging,
right.
you don't want to make it a financial transaction.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's, you know, again, a lot of what we're talking about is you're putting a price on someone's goodwill, someone's willingness to do something, you know, going back
right.
to the firefighter example,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're there because that's what they're driven to do. But as soon as you put a price to something, as soon as you create an incentive,
right.
Since we're using that word,
yeah.
an incentive for something, you know, I think that our nature is to take advantage of that incentive.
That's right.
And so why wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Yeah, because you've changed the relationship.
Right.
You've changed the nature of our relationship.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of saying, hey, you know, this is your job and... we appreciate that you really want to be here doing this job. And so we know that you're going to be here as often as you can. So you can have as many sick days as you need,
mm-hmm.
But we know that you're going to be here when you can. And you take that away and you say, okay, well, you're expected to be here every day, but you have 15 days that you can use as you want.
Well, mm-hmm.
That
okay.
makes it different.
You've changed. The relationship now has changed.
Yeah.
You know, I might still be... dedicated as I was before, but now you've changed our relationship.
Right.
Now you've given me 15 days.
Right.
Okay.
And 3 minutes for every 15 minutes, $3 for every 15 minutes that a parent is late. Hey, a $12 an hour for a babysitter.
Right.
That's,
if I can make $50 at work and pay
right.
you $12, that's an economic exchange.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the putting a price, you're putting a price on violating a social norm. In other words, the social norm was pick up your kids at a certain time. Everybody was willing to do that. Every once in a while you had a problem, but basically everybody was willing to do that. Putting a price on that, on a social norm, reframes your action. Puts it puts it in a whole other category. Now it's just an economic issue.
Right. Number four is everybody's doing it.
Right.
Everybody's doing it.
Have you stayed in a hotel recently where they have these signs that say, please reuse your towel?
No.
Yeah, they have little things now. Because most people do, you know. I mean, some people go into a hotel, and if there are six towels, they use all six. You know, one for the floor, and one for your hair, and one for your body. Hotels are now, they have little cards printed up that say, we'd like for you to reuse your towel. It saves on energy and electricity, and it's good for the environment. So if you don't mind, please reuse your towel. So this psychologist went and did an experiment to see if that would work, to see if what would be the biggest incentive, the most effective incentive for people to reuse their towels. Well, the plea for the environment turned out to be ineffective. Also, there was another card that said, we will donate X amount to environmental funds if you don't use your towel. And that turned out not to be effective. So which one was effective? There was a little card that said, we have done a study and we've learned that 75% of our guests reuse their towels. That was the effective one.
That was the effective one.
That's right. Because other people are doing it.
Right.
You're not getting anything.
Yeah.
There's no money exchanging. It's just that most other people are doing it. Plastic shopping bags.
Yes.
Okay, there was this study in Ireland where they wanted to do away with plastic shopping bags. So they charged 33 cents. You went to the grocery store, and if you want, do you want plastic or paper? And they said, I'll take, yes, it's okay. But they charge you 33 cents, okay? It wasn't that people were paying for it. It's that it was obvious as you were carrying your plastic bag that you were violating this agreement. And it was obvious to everybody. And so you had this social stigma attached to you. That was what made the difference, is the social stigma.
So we are much more likely to do things if we feel like other people are doing them. So, you know, that whole, whether it's the, we want to call it the mob mentality, or we call it following the crowd, or, you know, conforming to social norms, but it is absolutely part of our social being to try to fit in with who we see as our peers.
Everybody else is getting to the daycare center on time, you know. You're the only one leaving your kid there, and it's a social embarrassment. But what they said was, if you're picking your child up late, nobody else is there.
It'll see.
That's right. Nobody sees you picking your child up late.
Yeah.
Now, the last part of this, or the fifth point that they make, is called cobras, rats, and kids.
Right.
Okay. What is cobras, rats, and kids? When the British, I just love this stuff. When the British had colonized India, and they were concerned about the number of cobras crawling around. So they began to pay a bounty to get rid of the cobras. They began to pay a bounty for cobra skins, okay? And so it didn't seem to be working. Why not? Because people were raising cobras to make money. They were raising cobras, and they would kill them and give the skins. And so it was like...
And so then, it wasn't doing anything to the wild cobras.
Right, okay? Just... And so the British government said, oh, we're not going to bother with this anymore. So what'd they do? They let all the cobras go. So that it actually increased the number of cobras in India. Same thing with rats. There was another country they wanted to reduce the rat population. So they started paying people a bounty for every rat tail that you would turn in. Once again, people began farming rats, you know, growing rats.
The third part of this little...
Is kids.
Is kids. It's just worrying me the direction that you're heading.
So we let all the kids go. And so we have to be careful when we're dealing with children that we don't offer incentives that backfire on us.
Right.
Okay. And it frequently happens with children, you know, paying them to do chores. And like they mentioned one thing, and that if you pay your children an allowance to do their chores, mm-hmm. and they spend the allowance, and then you give them money to buy other things, mm-hmm. well, then they're going to spend their allowance faster.
Right.
Okay, there's a disincentive to save right. it, because mm-hmm. if they spend that real fast, they're going to mm-hmm. get some more. He tells, I think this was autobiographical, that his parents paid him for pulling you know what dandelions are?
Yeah.
Do you have them here?
Yeah.
In Florida?
You've been here, yeah.
You don't see many dandelions here.
Well, if you don't take care of your yard, you do.
Oh, you would.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, up north, dandelions are a big problem in yards. That's the only, there aren't as many weeds there as here. And he would get paid. Mm-hmm. And he learned that if he pulled the entire plant out by mm-hmm. the root, that it would not regenerate. Because mm-hmm. he got paid per dandelion.
Right.
Okay. So he learned very quickly that if he just pulled the flower,
yeah.
that he would be constantly harving these dandelions. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he's making more money. And so we do these incentive programs with children, but we have right. to be careful, because they can, again, they can backfire on
yeah.
us. Okay.
Yeah, I worry about that with positive behavior support in the schools and different things like that. But you know what all of this reminds me of is we the idea that, you know, we offer, you know, hey, if you fill out this survey, we'll give you this.
That's right.
Well, mm-hmm. you know, how valid might those survey results be?
Right.
If all I have to do is answer these 10 mm-hmm. questions and you're going to give me a $100 Amazon card right. or whatever, you know, well, I'm going to go through this pretty quickly, because, you know, I really don't have time to be doing right. this, but hey, $100 gift card, I'll do it.
Right.
And give it back, and here's my gift card. Thank you very much.
There was another. He mentioned.
I remember, you know what? The very first credit card that I ever got, you know why I got it? Because they were going to give me a t-shirt.
Really?
Yeah. I don't remember how old I was, but it was at USF, University of South Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I was walking through, and they go, hey, do you have a credit card? And I was like, no. He goes, hey, you want a t-shirt? I was like, yeah.
That was more important than the credit card.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I didn't care about the credit card.
Jeez,
but yeah.
Well, he mentions here about the studies, mm-hmm. you know, and he'll say, well, we want to conduct this study. We'll give you $50 to participate. Mm-hmm. And you say, oh, maybe I will. If they offer you $5,000,
yeah.
then you say, there must be something wrong.
Right.
You know, if they're willing to pay me $5,000, the risks must be really, really high.
Right.
And so just because you give more money doesn't mean you're going to get a better response
right.
or a higher response.
Yeah, I think that the research said, like, when you're doing mail surveys, I don't know how many people get these. I get them every once in a while,
yeah.
probably because of some membership organizations that I'm involved with. But you'll get something, and I'll have a coin, a nickel.
Right.
And that's because there was some research that suggested that a nickel is the smallest amount that you could give someone that has the power to increase the likelihood that they're going to participate in what you don't go a penny, because if they get a penny, they're not going to use it.
Right.
You don't have to give a dollar, because a dollar is much more than what
you really, more than you need.
More than you need. So
right.
a nickel is the smallest monetary unit
right.
that is needed to incentivize someone right. to participate in a survey.
That's funny. It's 5 cents.
A nickel.
Okay. Yeah. Well, see,
I've got a bunch of nickels at home.
But
you know what?
Service.
Because I read that article, I was like, you know what? I'm going to take your nickel, and I'm not going to fill
throw it
out.
You didn't do it anyway,
no,
right?
No, I didn't.
But they didn't really miss the nickel, because
no.
it wasn't that much.
Right.
So it's, again, a quid pro quo.
Right.
The message here, of course, is we want to strive, especially when we're taking care of children.
Right.
We want to strive for intrinsic motivation.
Right.
And once we achieve that, you know, one of the things we say in behavior management is the concrete incentives or rewards mm-hmm. are only used to get the behavior started. Once the behavior
right.
is going, then you remove them.
Right, absolutely.
But we're not doing that.
Yeah,
we're making
really
a fundamental mistake, because we keep incentives. That's right. And you have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it loses its value.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So, good article.
Yeah.
A little bit long.
This is another long podcast.
Pretty long. But again, worth reading, because it brings that very different perspective mm-hmm. about reward and punishment.
I think you like this topic.
I love this topic. Well, we teach it, and it's hard
yeah.
to teach this topic, because we want teachers to stop using rewards
mm-hmm.
and punishments. But it's a hard sell, because
yeah.
it's so intuitively appealing.
Yeah.
And so this gives you some additional information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, definitely check out the article. You might want to take it into chunks. and just read it in pieces.
Five easy pieces.
That's right. So, all right. So, until next time.
We could do Five Easy Pieces as one of our movies.
Until next time. I don't know that movie. Five Easy Pieces. Stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.